Friel's mesmerising play about faith, art and love. Performed by Owen Rowe, Leah Williams and Phil Daniels.
Let's just say I did it because I could do it.
Such a twisted man.
Just a little bit thoughtless.
Faith Healer. Tonight at 8 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
We're on 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's just after 1 o'clock. Time for the news with Ian Skelly.
The Chief Secretary to the Treasury, Danny Alexander, has insisted that all cuts to the welfare budget will be fair. Labour has accused the coalition government of planning a vicious attack on the poorest in society after a leaked letter claimed there were proposals to cut £2.5 billion of sickness payment. A man has been arrested in connection with the death of an 11-year-old girl after an accident at a water sports centre near Heathrow Airport. Marie-Simon Cognier was seriously injured when she fell off an inflatable which was being towed by a boat. The Prince's Club in Bedfont has been closed while an investigation is carried out. More than 100 contracts have been awarded for the building of 2 aircraft carriers, despite fears that the project may be cancelled due to spending cuts. Thousands of jobs in Scotland and the southwest of England could be at risk if the plans don't go ahead following a defence spending review next month. The figures were obtained by the Labour MP for Dunfermline and West Fife, Thomas Doherty, who's urged the coalition government to honour the contracts. A British soldier who died in hospital in Birmingham on Friday after being shot in southern Afghanistan last month has been named as Kingsman Darren Diddy. He was 22 and came from Bolton. The soldier from 2nd Battalion, the Duke of Lancaster's regiment, came under fire while protecting what the MOD has described as a vital location in Helmand province. A 44-year-old man has died at a police station in County Durham. He'd been arrested following a disturbance in Seaham yesterday afternoon. The French director Claude Chabrol has died at the age of 80. He was one of the founders of the New Wave movement, which revolutionised cinema in the 1950s and 60s. He made dozens of films in the course of his long career. His last work, Bellamy, was released last year. And the weather, it's a dry day for most with sunny spells, but there'll be heavy scattered showers in eastern England this afternoon, and wind and rain will affect Northern Ireland and Western Scotland by the early evening. And that's the BBC News and the weather. It's now just coming up to 3 minutes past one.
And that was Ian Skelly. I'm Jill Anderson. Good afternoon to you. In an hour's time, Radio 3 Requests with Fiona Torkington. And that's followed at 4 by Choral Evensong, another chance to hear last Wednesday's service of evening prayer from Neresheim Abbey in Germany. And then at 5 in Discovering Music, Charles Hazlewood and the BBC Concert Orchestra explore Graham Fitkin's new BBC commission, Tidal, with the help of the composer himself. But now it's time to explore the music of the past in today's early music show. This is a revised repeat of a programme first broadcast in March. Here's Catherine Bott.
Le vostro pie, le vostro. scene from Handel's opera Rinaldo, with David Daniels in the title role and the Academy of Ancient Music conducted by Christopher Hogwood. Imagine yourself at the theatre in Handel's London, in the audience for a performance of Rinaldo in Lincoln's Inn Fields, where you probably have been treated to an entr'acte danse performed by one of the most famous and innovative dancers of her age, Marie Salé. Salé was born in 1707, the daughter of a fairground tumbler. She and her brother Francis came to London from their native France as teenagers to make their debut at Lincoln's Inn Fields Theatre, where Marie's repertoire included such items as The Submission, a ballroom dance in the grand manner, and comic numbers like The Dutch Skipper, as well as the entr'acte dances in Rinaldo, which was enjoying a popular revival. Marie, whose brother seems to have partnered her on and off throughout her career, made quite an impact on the London stage. However crude the repertoire, she had an innate grace, using her skills to make the humblest dance emotionally true and expressive, rather than reaching for cheap tricks. Her next step was to return to Paris in search of more formal training, probably with the great Françoise Prévost and possibly with Jean Ballon of the Paris Opera. But she and her brother loyally turned out with their uncle's dance troupe at various fairs before Madame Prévost sponsored her debut at the Paris Opera in 1721.
Thank you.
French dancing in all its refinery. The characters of the dance by Rebelle, played there by Les Musiciens du Louvre, conducted by Marc Minkowski, and danced in 1727 by Marie Salé and Antoine Laval, who caused a sensation by leaving off the masks that were then de rigueur, just the first of her daring innovations. After another visit to London in 1725, Marie began to enjoy a channel-hopping career. At her benefit performance at Lincoln's Inn Fields 6 years later, the 24-year-old dancing star was honoured by a good turnout of royalty. She liked London so much that she reneged on her long-term contract with the Paris Opera the next year. So, London theatre-goers in the early 1730s could enjoy Salé's dancing in The Beggar's Opera and in her own rather avant-garde dance entertainments, like the double bill of Pygmalion with Bacchus and Ariadne, which got a glowing review in a French newspaper. Obviously, her country didn't resent her absence, which praised her gift for expressing sentiments of the most profound sorrow, fury and humiliation, and comparing her to the greatest actresses of the day. Marie Salé also became something of a muse to Handel, contributing her own prologue, Terpsichore, to the third version of his opera Il Pastor Fido. I asked soprano and Handel scholar Susanna Ograjenczyk about their collaborations.
The collaboration of Handel and Marie Salé is of particular interest because she was the only dancer of supreme stature that Handel worked with in such a close relationship. Now, we know he had several star singers that he wrote for, and we actually know how particular he was when he was writing arias for them in operas to show the whole scope of their talent. And this is what he's doing for Marie Salé in Terpsichore.
Well, before we get on to Terpsichore and Il Pastor Fido, let's talk about the 1734-5 season at Covent Garden. How many works of Handel did Marie Salé perform in?
She danced in all of his operas that season, which include Il Pastor Fido and include Ariodante and Alcina.
Well, I've been reading a lot about her to prepare the programme, and it seems that she had a gift not so much for being a show-off virtuoso, but for displaying the pathetic emotions and being a dancer with whom the audience could identify. I mean, is anything known about what Handel thought about her work?
Well, he never wrote anything down. Unfortunately, we do not have Handel's diaries. But the whole fact that he agreed to this season in 1734 to work with her is a testament that he thought she was a great artist. It is usually thought that this scene, because Handel was in a very precarious position at the time, the rival opera of nobility was setting up rival opera seasons. They whisked off all his main singers. They had Farinelli and Senesino as a star castrato couple. So it is usually thought that this move to Covent Garden and collaboration with Salé is a sort of a hasty attempt to rescue himself. But in fact, we've got a letter that Salé wrote to her patroness in London, Sarah Lennox, the Duchess of Richmond, which was written in early 1730s, and proves that Salé has actually contracted herself to Paris Opera on a condition that she will have leave to go to London if she wanted, if an opportunity arose. And we know that Rich, in particular, was actually interesting in supporting Italian opera, which would include dance. And given that getting Handel and Salé together must have entailed quite considerable financial considerations, it seems that this season was, in fact, actually a lot more prepared for and thought through several years in advance. So rather than being just a last-minute arrangement, it was actually a season which was supported by the nobility of London, and three people, so Salé, Handel and Rich, were pulled in to do this experiment of combining Italian opera with dance.
Susanna Ograjenczyk. One night in the 1734-5 season, Salé's performance as Cupid in the opera Alcina was hissed. It was originally claimed that it was her risqué costume that met with the claque's displeasure, but it's also possible that the hissing was specially laid on by a rival company. A sure sign, one way or another, that she was an important star of the London theatrical scene. And later in the run, her big number was encored. After all, Alcina was Handel's hit of the season. A suite of dances from Act One, Scene Two of Handel's opera Alcina, played by Il Complesso Barocco, conducted by Alan Curtis. During that glorious season of Handel opera hits, one stands out from the dance point of view. Il Pastor Fido was the first London opera seria to have a danced prologue with a title of its own. In Terpsichore, Marie Salet portrayed the muse of dance, with Handel's music and her own choreography depicting various passions. Susanna Ogrienczyk has edited Il Pastor Fido for the Hellische Handel Ausgabe. When we talked, I asked her, how did it work, this unlikely combination of French opera ballet and Italian opera seria?
Well, my theory is, in fact, that Handel thought of Il Pastor Fido as a crisis opera, because it always appears in his life on stages where he really has to fight for audience. So even though some people are of the opinion the English did not really like pastoral, I think that Handel did use pastoral subjects as a bait for the audience. Now, when it comes to Terpsichore, this was a grand opening of the new season. And obviously, I think they wanted to show Salé, they wanted to give Salé scope to really present her abilities. And as you said earlier, she was known for expressiveness. Salé really believed, at the times where other dancers would emphasize virtuosity, that dance has to mean something. Dance can tell a story, it can express emotions. And this is what Terpsichore is about. So we have this nice scene with Apollo and the Muses, and Terpsichore is asked, she arrives with her corpse du ballet, and she's asked to demonstrate pangs of lover who's been rejected and happiness of true love and also jealousy and velocity of the winds. And for each one of these dances, Handel writes music which allows Salé to portray emotion.
So it's a sort of advertisement for the power of dance.
Indeed. In a way, Alexander's Feast, for instance, springs to mind, a later Handel's work, which is an advertisement for the power of music. But I think it was dance at that point that really needed an advertisement. Because, as you say, other dancers in that particular period emphasized virtuosity. So I think this work really must have meant a lot to Salé. And I really wonder who was the person who came up with the conception of this prologue. Was it Handel? Was it Salé's suggestion of, first of all, her as the muse of dance, and secondly, as a statement of what dance can achieve?
How revolutionary was this prologue?
Well, this prologue is the only opera ballet we have in London in the 18th century, so it's unique. And we know that the audience were fighting for tickets at the opening of the 1734 season. You had to be very, very lucky to get into the theatre. So it was really, really warmly and well received. When it comes to being revolutionary in terms of ballet writing and in terms of the dance itself, I think Salé herself would have probably been using more or less known steps, known formula. But what's really revolutionary here is this idea of dance expressing emotion, of dance telling story, which was not that accepted at the time. I mean, when we say expressive in 17th century, this is nothing like modern expressive dance. We must be aware of that. But still, this is, I think, Handel and Salé showing us, you know, a way forward.
Soprano and Handel scholar Susanna Ograjenczyk. Let's hear that Terpsichore prologue now and imagine what one review called the refined and delicate grace of Mademoiselle Salé. Terpsichore, Handel's prologue to the third version of his opera Il Pastor Fido, played by the English Baroque soloists under John Elliott Gardiner. If you've just joined us, you've found the Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, looking at the career of the 18th century dancer Marie Salé. As dancer and choreographer, Marie Salé was really nothing less than a revolutionary. During the first decades of the 18th century, dancers habitually wore elaborate, heavy, restrictive costumes, and in France, masks, to emphasise the portrayal of emotional archetypes. And their steps were all about displays of technical virtuosity. Here's how Salé looked when she danced her own ballet, Pygmalion, in London in 1734. According to one review, "She has dared to appear in this entree without pannier, skirt or bodice, and with her hair down. She did not wear a single ornament on her head. Apart from her corset and petticoat, she wore only a simple dress of muslin, draped about her in the manner of a Greek statue." The simplicity of that look was matched by the truthfulness of her dancing. Her whole aim when making a ballet was to match music, costume and movement with the dramatic theme. After that London season, Salé returned in triumph to the Paris Opera, where Rameau was as inspired by her work as Handel had been. In 1735, she appeared in the Ballet des Fleurs, part of Rameau's exotic opera Les Indes Galantes. Years later, the dancer and ballet master Jean-Georges Nauvert pronounced her pas de deux to be an early ballet d'action, the precursor of the narrative ballets that are so familiar to us today.
Thank you.
the Ballet des Fleurs from Rameau's opera Les Indes Galantes, with Jean-François Paillard conducting his own orchestra. Marie Salé was acclaimed for her performances in other Rameau operas, Castor et Pollux, Les Fêtes d'Hébé, and in Campra's L'Europe Galante. Suddenly, though, in 1740, she retired from the Paris opera at the age of just 33. She was given a pension by the king, performed occasionally at court, and died in 1756. As the first woman to choreograph the ballets in which she appeared, she seems to have enjoyed sitting back and watching as male choreographers slowly caught up with her. Nevers, 20 years younger and the man who really created the Ballet d'Action, always acknowledged his debt to Salé, who anticipated many of his ideas by nearly 30 years. Salé was known in France as La Vestale. She never married, although there was a good deal of speculation about the nature of her relationship with her long-term female companion. She was greatly admired for her intelligence, as well as the unparalleled grace and expressiveness of her dancing. But as with many a female pioneer, the importance of her work has been perhaps a little underestimated. Her great rival as a dancer was the dazzling Marianne Cupy de Camargo, 3 years younger, who was famous for shortening her skirts, dancing in slippers rather than the traditional heeled shoes, and, according to Casanova's memoirs, wearing no drawers. But it was Marie Salé who was the real innovator, and her collaboration with Handel thrilled London theatregoers. Before we play her out with music from Handel's opera Ariodante, let's leave the last word to dancer and ballet moderniser Jean-Georges Nevers. I was enchanted by her dancing. She possessed neither the brilliance nor the technical feats common to dancing nowadays, but for glitter she substituted simple and touching grace. Free from affectation, her face was noble, expressive, and intelligent. Her voluptuous dance was conceived with as much finesse as lightness. It was not by leaps and frolics that she went to your heart.
Raymond Lepard conducted the English Chamber Orchestra in that recording of the Combat des Songes Funestes et Agréables, the end of the ballet from Act 2 of Handel's Ariodante. And that music ended today's Early Music Show, which was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Manchester by Sam Phillips.
On BBC Radio 3, Afternoon on 3 presents the complete works of Gustav Mahler. To mark the 150th anniversary of the composer's birth, we'll be bringing you 5 weeks of Mahler between now and the end of the year, celebrating various facets of his life and work. To begin, we explore the fundamentally Mahlerian themes of love and death, with a week of music including proms performances from the season just past and an opera matinee, the very first stage performance Mahler ever conducted. Afternoon on 3 with the music of Mahler, composer, conductor. Weekday afternoons this week from 2 o'clock.
Well, this afternoon at 4 o'clock, there's another chance to hear last Wednesday's service of evening prayer from Neresheim Abbey in Germany on the birthday of the Blessed Virgin Mary. We'll be hearing music by C.P. Bach, Guerrero, Frescobaldi and Handel. And then at 5, Discovering Music with Charles Hazlewood. The BBC Concert Orchestra explores Graham Fitkin's new BBC commission, Tidal, with help of Graham Fitkin himself. That's at 5 o'clock. But next this afternoon, Radio 3 Requests. This week's pick of your favourite music is introduced by Fiona Talkington.
There's something of a South American and Spanish theme to the first few requests this afternoon. There are more requests from members of the audience at the Cheltenham Music Festival, and my guest requester is the singer Natalie Merchant, so there's lots to pack into the next couple of hours. John Cook has emailed to confess that he's a failed guitarist. Having tried to play for 40 years, I still don't play well enough to entertain friends, but I get tremendous pleasure listening to good players. This is a piece John and his wife heard played by a guitarist near the cathedral in Barcelona, a piece which he says always makes him smile. The Sons de Carillos by the Brazilian composer João Pernambuco. Jonathan Richards playing that delightful little piece by the Brazilian composer João Pernambuco, which I hope has brought back happy memories of Barcelona for John Cook. I love melody and I love to sing, said the 20th century Argentinian composer Carlos Guastavino. John Woods has asked to hear his song Pampa Mapa, or Map of the Plains. It's full of the native rhythms that Guastavino loved so much, skillfully repeating the syllables that make up the song's title. And after that, I couldn't resist adding the gentler Encantamiento, which describes the enchantment a mother feels for her baby.
Mm-hmm.